freaking auto!
This is Brock and Salk.
Brock Heward and Marcus. Sorry about just
Mike. Mike.
On Seattle Sports.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
You were not exactly Joe Cap there in the pocket.
Presented by Simply Seattle.
Now here are your hosts, Brock Heward and Mike Saul.
It wasn't the worst weekend ever for the Mariners, but it certainly wasn't the best. The offense cold to start the season, and I think based on the issues it had last year, especially in April and May and into June, there are going to be a lot of eyes on that and a lot of extra concern. As I said, Brock, no panic, but maybe a little side eye this morning. They're not quite in the eye of Sauron or anything like that. It's just a little... just a little side eye, like, hey guys, let's do a little better than that, okay? Mm-hmm. Let's not strike out 45 times and only walk six. Yeah. Let's hit more than three home runs in a four-game series. Yep. Let's score more than one run in three of the games during regulation before you get gifted a runner on second base.
Sure.
Like, let's do a little bit more than that. Let's have more hits. Let's do more.
Yeah, I was reminded of Cal Raleigh. I was thinking about him yesterday, and I think over the course of the season, he'll be more and more of a presence and a voice. He already is. But, you know, when he sat down with you and I, and we played that sound Thursday before opening day of him just saying, golly, we want to stop being just defined by our pitching. We get it, okay? Our pitching's great. And boy, was it ever. Kirby and Logan were absolutely phenomenal. They were nails. That's why this series was split largely. Mm-hmm. And Julio was clutch a couple different times, which was awesome. But I was thinking about Cal, like, okay, and Cal would even say this. He would say, it's one thing to talk it, we got to walk it. And, you know, we are tired of hearing we're just all pitching and pitching and pitching. Well, if you're tired of that narrative, there's only one way to change it. And it That's wasn't right. the production over the first four games of this season.
It was not.
Yeah.
So I loved, I don't know if you guys had a chance to see it, but SeattleSports.com, our editor Brent Stecker had a nice way of framing the weekend where he says, you know, here's three questions that came out of it
why.
For him.
I mean, you know why Brent did that, right? He's an afraid of guy. And back in the day, like Fred McGriff's baseball camp would come to Ephrata. I mean, Ephrata was the epicenter of all things baseball. You got to understand that. You know, that's why he is such an extraordinary
editor. Well, I like the way he did this. He's got three questions, and I'd like to add two more at the end of this that I have as well. But I just thought we'd run through some of the questions that Brent had coming out of the weekend. Number one, can they get a handle on the strikeouts? It's a huge question. 45 strikeouts is actually a higher rate than they had at any point or, you know, for the year last year. Mm-hmm. That's a lot. That's 45 strikeouts in just four games. That's a remarkable, remarkable number. I, of course, was probably more caught up with the walks. The six walks to me is hugely problematic. You got to walk more than 1.5 times per game. Last year, that number was more than double that, Brock, and they were down from the year before that.
Yep.
That's an issue.
And a lot of those strikeouts were spin.
Yeah.
I think through the first three games, I'm waiting to see the fourth game get added to this, 35% spin.
Oh, no, it was
sliders
much more than that.
Sweepers.
Yeah. No, it was 60% when it was all said and done. Red Sox threw 60% cutter, sliders, and curves, 15% two-seam sinkers, 12% changeups. And I guess that would also include splitters, and then only 13% fastballs for the weekend, just straight fastballs.
Correct.
Yeah, it's an issue, and Scott knows there's only one way out of it.
You know, we're not getting a ton of fastballs, until you start hitting the slow ball or the breaking pitch, the changeup, that's what they're going to keep throwing. So we know that. It is a long season, and everybody wants to point, you know, the strikeouts, this and that. You know, we do have a good offensive team. The guys at the top of the lineup and getting pitched tough, and, you know, we're not doing much with it.
Striking out a lot in four games is not a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
Striking out a lot in four games after striking out as much as you did last year and working hard to try to change that narrative is a little bit more of a big deal, if that makes sense.
Yeah, a little tougher to swallow. Because, I mean, we want to correct this, right? It's like an offensive line. We don't want to give up so many sacks. We want to get the ball out. We want to protect ourselves. And then you're sacked seven times again. So, yeah, it's four games. It's a very small sample. But, man, there was a lot of spin. And guess what Cleveland's going to do?
Yeah,
they're going to come in and they're going to throw a lot of spin. Yep, they can pitch.
Question two, what's up with Mitch Garver? He played in one game. Looked pretty good in the opener, right? Had a hit another ball really hard. Unfortunately, back spasms. And now he's missed the next three games. I expect him to be back in there today. But this is our first glimpse of, hey, we got some injury concerns on this team. He's not catching. He's only DHing. And the back is already kind of acting up on him. And you see, when you take him out of the lineup, and then yesterday when you take Cal out, it stops feeling quite as long as it looked when it was in spring training.
Agreed. And back spasms are a day-to-day deal and can be, you know, one of those situations that, yikes, I don't like back spasms. I know back spasms, Salk. In fact, I had them Saturday afternoon standing on the field for a couple hours. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I got to the airport and was just spasming. So, and just not, you know, as an old guy, and he's not an old guy yet. But that's a day-to-day deal, and you'd sure love to see that day-to-day end and him back in the lineup.
Third question from Brent, is Mitch Haniger back? Gosh, if this weekend is any indication, the easy answer to that is yeah, right? I mean, one home run, he's hitting .286, but look at the slash line, .333 on base, .571 slug, an OPS of over .900. That's, you know, if he can, and defense that was not problematic in any way, if he can do that, he's driven in 3 of their 7 runs so far this year, whatever it is. No, it's a few more than that. But yeah, what a start.
Mm-hmm. 9 runs, comfortable. Looks comfortable. Right. I mean, he's one of those guys that wanted to be here. We felt it all spring. He was unbelievably hot. He was one of the few that stayed hot no matter what the circumstances were. And I would say comfort a big part of that.
Yeah. So I would give that an answer of, hey, I sure hope so, because this looks like it's going on the right track and we'll just kind of monitor for injury. I got 2 other questions that I would kind of add. The first is, can your 4, 5, and 6 pitchers get deep enough into games? Because, you know, look, I'm gonna kind of give Castillo a pass on first opening night, et cetera, and assume that when he takes the ball tomorrow, we're going to see the real Castillo. If not, we'll talk about it. But you saw Kirby and Gilbert get deep into the game. And then you saw Bryce Miller yesterday just kind of like behind a lot of guys and just like, hey, man, you got to find a way to get some contact in there, because otherwise the game gets, it can get away from you.
Yeah. Otherwise right now, this bullpen is not built for you to go 5. I mean, it's just not.
That's right.
Without, you know, a couple of your absolute studs, they need more, and you're going to be, you know, mixing and matching and seeing a bunch of new pieces. And some of the guys, Snyder did pretty good yesterday, and some of them, you know, are going to struggle. It's just this right now with those injuries to Santos and Brash, you've got to find a way to, and I know it's early and I know that's asking a lot. And, you know, that's probably, it's probably a little bit unfair because Kirby and Gilbert are at that level, even as young players, to do that. But yeah, you'd sure love to see those guys not just, whew, we got to 5. It's got to get a whole lot closer to 6+.
Yeah, I actually thought Scott did a good job of kind of talking through what that looked like yesterday.
I thought Bryce's stuff today out of the chute was really good. I thought the fastball was good. I thought the split finger is a new pitch for him. I thought he had good results with that early on, but it was constantly kind of behind in the count all day. And it's tough to eventually you're going to kind of put yourself again in a corner, and you know, I obviously made a mistake and left the ball in the middle of the plate for the 3-run homer.
And that's kind of how that goes, right? You're behind a little bit. And Brock, you kind of hit on the last question there. Do you have a reliable pen after Munoz right now? I'm going to put Stanek in there and Spire. I know Stanek didn't have the world's best start, but okay, fine. I'll put Stanek based on past performance and Spire in there. After that, I think you got a lot of real question marks.
Yep. A lot of new names. A lot of new guys. That's kind of fun to see them come out. Oh, who is this guy? Who's Michael Bolton's son? Oh, that's kind of cool. Like, who are these different pieces coming into the game? And we know, like, bullpen development and finding guys out of nowhere has been a story every single year, right? It's like a Steckenrider, and then there's a Topa, and there's a Seawald. And these guys were not big names coming in, but they found huge production, and there will be. Somebody will pop this year. I fully believe that. Somebody's going to be like, wow, where did that guy come from?
Thank God
he came. But you can't have 3 of them. Right. I mean, without Brash and Santos, you can't rely on like, come on now, you're going to find 2 or 3 of these guys. You're going to find 1.
Well, because you're already kind of relying on Trent Thornton, who hasn't really shown to be that.
Correct.
So like you're putting a lot of strain on those middle innings and therefore the pitchers to go, the starters to go deeper into the game. And if that's all going to happen, the offense probably isn't going to be able to score essentially 1 run a game when they're not handed a runner on second. So some question marks, certainly, but also some huge positives in Julio finding a way to win that game on Saturday. It changes the way the entire weekend feels. It changes because otherwise you come in here being like, oh my gosh, they just got steamrolled and didn't hit at all. Thank God Julio did his thing. We'll play you the sound of that coming up next. I'm Brock and Salk.
Need to know.
15 minutes past every hour with Brock and Salk.
Here's what you need to know. up first.
Not the most satisfying weekend for the Mariners, but let's be clear, it wasn't awful either. They did go 2-2, weekend split at T-Mobile, as the Mariners did take the middle two games of the series, dropped the first and the last. Friday, dominated by more pitching. Kirby, Spire, Stanek, Munoz combining on the shutout. J.P. Crawford handling all of the offense with a solo home run in the sixth. And then Saturday, well, how about a little comeback and the first walk-off of Julio's career.
Game-winning run at third, and a pitch. Line drive, right center field, ball game, Julio Rodriguez gets it done. Yes, sir, and the Mariners win it. 4-3, Rojas scores, and that's your ball game.
That's a nice little comeback. Julio was drenched. I said it earlier, I've never seen a wetter player on the field. You ever seen anything like that, Brock? He was soaked through to the bone. Yes, it's crazy.
I think I've been waiting on that. I can't believe that's his first walk-off.
I know.
Like, of everything that Julio has done, and it has been an extraordinary, and you bring on Tim Kirkchin, and you bring on Jeff Passan, and you bring on any national voice, and it is the same wow factor with his kind of talent and abilities. Hard to imagine. It took over 2 years for him to have his first walk-off. But he did it the night before, man. He passed the baton. He was in a leveraged moment late in that game, and he didn't swing, and they were throwing him the same crap they threw him the year before, down in a way that he would chase and he would try to do too much. Didn't happen. And even in that at bat, Salk, he kind of just sniffed a few of those away and said no thanks. And then when he finally got one to hit, he delivered, and what a walk-off.
Well, his starting pitcher on Saturday, Logan Gilbert, was good, didn't get the win, but he loved the way it ended.
Yeah, that was huge. So glad he's on our team. He helps out a lot. It's amazing what he can do every night, and he's so consistent, what he brings to the table on both sides. But be able to do that, finish it off strong, I think it says a lot about him and his maturity, especially early in the season.
So some of the real positive, unfortunately, a 5-1 loss yesterday. They just haven't hit. In fact, they've scored just 7 runs in the 35 innings in which they weren't gifted a runner at second base to start.
They've
struck out 45 times. They've walked only 6. They're not controlling the zone. They're really not stringing together hits or playing small ball. They did get tremendous starts from Kirby and Gilbert, but they're just not hitting.
You know, we're not getting a ton of fastballs. And until you start hitting the slow ball or the breaking pitch, the changeup, that's what they're going to keep throwing. So we know that. We know that. It is a long season, and everybody wants to point, the strikeouts, this and that. You know, we do have a good offensive team. Guys at the top of the lineup and getting pitched tough, and, you know, we're not doing much with it.
I think he's right about all of that.
Yeah, I think Brent Brown's looking at his pieces now as the offense coordinator, and when it counts for real, and when that ball spins a little bit better up in the Northwest than it does down in the desert and everything else. And, yeah, man, 11%. You only saw 11% fastball. The league average was 30% over the course of the weekend. So you're seeing 20% less fastball than everybody else across the league average. That's got to change. You got to eat on those fastballs. And until you don't, and Cleveland come in and pitch.
Yep,
you
know, Cleveland's going to. That's what they do. They come in for 3 starting tonight. Emerson Hancock against the Guardians. They went 3-1 in Oakland to start the year.
Here's the second thing you need to know.
Connecticut, Purdue, Alabama, and NC State. 2-1 seeds of 4, and then the number 11 comprised the final 4. The Wolfpack becoming the first team ever with 14 losses to reach this stage of the tournament. Gonzaga didn't get there. No answer for Zach Edey. They held him to 27, gave up, he scored 40 against Tennessee yesterday. So there's your final 4, Brock.
Does this NC State team not remind you of the 83 cardiac, right? The pack?
Yes, I know. I was 5 then.
But all the stories written about him and Jim Valvano and all the highlights and everything that they did, they were the same way. They were not supposed to be there. They were also, I believe, a double-digit seed. And these guys are a cast of characters. Have you seen their big man?
Yeah.
I know DJ, whatever. I know Zach Edey is like this. Like he looks like Yao Ming, honestly. He's like 7'6", 7'5", and he moves like Yao Ming. He's kind of thick like Yao Ming. And then this dude, though, DJ, go be a left tackle in the league. I saw Jim Nagy tweeting about that. I thought the same thing.
Yeah.
Like, get in that stance, bro, and be a left tackle and swallow dudes up in
George
the NFL.
Fance. He knows what he's doing. The women's bracket has been a whole lot more fun, to be honest with you. Shaping up for an incredible finish here. Iowa and LSU, 4:15 this afternoon in a rematch of last year's final. All the drama between these two teams. Caitlin Clark pumped.
I think we're excited. I think, you know, anytime you have a chance to go up against somebody you lost to, it brings a little more energy, but – at this point in the tournament, every single team is good, whether you're playing West Virginia, whether you're playing Colorado, whether you're playing LSU. You prep the exact same way. You come in with the same exact mindset. And I think overall it's just going to be a really great game for women's basketball, and they're really solid 1-5.
I think she's right about that. And then on the other side, Angel Reese, she's like, yeah, you don't like me? That's fine.
I think people just take it like we hate each other. Like, me and Caitlin Clark don't hate each other. Like, I want everybody to understand that it's just a super competitive game. And, like, when I get between those lines, like, we're not friends. We're not buddies. I'm going to talk trash to you. I'm going to do whatever it takes to get in your head the whole entire game. But I don't think people really realize that. And that's fine. I'll take the villain role. I'll take the hit for it. But I know we're going women's basketball. And if this is the way we're going to do it, then this is the way we're going to do it. You like it or you don't.
Man, the women's game, so many more storylines.
Right?
So many more characters. So many more, like, heels and just, you know, villains and heroes and stars. And it's just awesome. It's awesome. I know Scott Ruick, I was listening to him, the Oregon State coach, after the game say, you know, can we just appreciate the basketball? And they're awesome. And they played South Carolina really tough. But it's like, no, that's not what sells. That's not what gets 5 million people watching. It's a storyline like tonight with LSU and Caitlin Clark going at it toe-to-toe. I think the Tigers are a little tougher and stronger overall, but we'll see if Iowa can shoot, man. If they can shoot, they've got a shot.
Here's the third thing you need to know.
Real quick, Kraken lose 3-0 over the weekend, but they did call up Shane Wright. We'll see him finally in action tonight, Brock, as they go to San Jose. The team has 9 games left. He can play in 6 of those without burning a year of his entry-level contract. So my guess is that's exactly what we're going to see him do.
Wowzers, about time.
Yeah.
Oh, right. Smokes. Now, they did play some kind of dreck here down the stretch. I think the Stars, I was looking at their schedule and the remaining games, and there's the Yotes, and yeah, there's some opportunities to...
They just lost 10 of 12 at home.
Yeah.
Like, I don't even know what to say about that. That's everything you need to know, quarter past every hour, here on the Brock and Salk Show. Carter says thank you for Booms Ranked and the birthday love on Friday. Made my day when I could finally listen on the podcast later that day. We got you, Carter. We're here to help. Glad Booms Ranked went the way you thought that it would.
And the show's got a chance, by the way. We got a chance. We need Purdue to win.
Yeah.
Purdue wins in the Final Four. Your boy here can represent the show well in our little March Madness pool tournament. So
did you
know
Brock,
about that.
Did you know who was in the finals last year?
Did I know who was in the finals last year? I know UConn won the whole thing.
Well, that's what Maura told me. If you had given me an hour, I don't think I would have known the answer to that.
And UConn's been
And they beat San Diego State, too. I don't even remember that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Crazy.
Yeah, remember, it was like, weren't we cheering on San Diego because of Ty France? And he's wearing the San Diego jersey.
I think I must have blocked it all out of my mind. I don't have any memory of that whatsoever.
Brock, were you not going to read the email that Lefko sent us to update the bracket?
Yeah.
What do you
mean?
It
starts out... Chaos ripped through the heart of this weekend. Dreams went unfulfilled. Brackets ripped asunder, and tears were shed.
It's pretty good.
He was the one crying because Purdue finally made a Final Four. You would have thought he'd been.
Seriously. All right. Coming up next, it was a busy weekend for the Mariners, obviously. It's easy to get caught up in the negative, and it's relevant. But I want to go through some things that were great, some things that were not. And actually some things that were right exactly in between. It's next on Brock and Salk.
You're listening to Brock and Salk.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
On Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app.
What is this garbage? 206 says, ugh, the Mitch Witch. Can we all decide that mayo belongs on the side like every other condiment? If not, I demand hot dogs come with ketchup. Shaking my head, the best half was ruined by mayo. Yeah, 206, you're going to get blocked for this. That's a terrible take. Whoa. Mayo's the best. Mayo's been getting such a bad rap in the last few years. Mayo is the best, and hot dogs and ketchup. What are we, child? We're not children.
I would say your picture wasn't the greatest.
Yeah, but nothing I take a picture of looks good.
I know, but just as a friend, like...
Let's be clear. I'm a bad picture taker. I am a terrible photographer. I am not going to have a second career like Randy Johnson and Ken Griffey Jr. Going into the world of photography. No. I have no ability to make anything look good in a picture.
Nope. I was thinking of our friends, you know, over there at the Mariners.
Can't do it.
All the conversation about the Mitch Witch.
I know. And then
your picture is like, oh, bro.
I'll taste it great, man. It was awesome. I told the whole story on... on Friday with all 25 people all gathered around waiting for the Mitch Witch and chanting and cheering. And it delivered, man. It was really, really good. All right. This weekend, Brock, four games into this Mariners season. So basically, you know, I think we know for sure who this team is by now, right? They've played a full four games, right? Some things we liked, some things we didn't, and some things that are in between through the first four games.
I'll tell you what I like, that this little theme here has stuck around for 40 years.
Yeah.
Like John Tesh with the NBA's little music. Like, this thing has stuck around. Not easy that the synthesizers can hang for 40 years, but this sucker has. It's really good.
It's pretty good.
Yes.
I liked Kirby and Gilbert a lot. Differently, right? They still do it differently, but very much each of them pitching to who they are. They are not 2-2 today if it's not for Kirby and Gilbert. That's for sure. If you had to start ranking important guys and who delivered this weekend, they're probably 1-2.
Did you like George's shirt? His t-shirt was the talk of the town after the start. Did you see it? It was like it was not even furious George. It was like angry.
Yeah.
Like a bloody knife or something. Like, whoa. Okay, here we go, Curse. Hey. He was not happy when he got pulled out of that game.
Wasn't happy when he walked a couple of guys early in the
game.
I really like angry George Kirby. It's a funny, like,
development. It says angry George's dreamland.
Yeah.
A little, I don't know if
play
that's
on the
a
whole Kirby thing.
What is that? What is that thing in there, Justin? What is that a hole?
The Kirby character?
Yes.
Oh, it's a cartoon character. And a Nintendo
video
character.
Game. Yeah.
Gotcha.
It's Kirby. Oh, it's the Kirby game.
It has a little bloody knife.
he is like, I don't think I would have guessed. I remember the first time Kirby's we interviewed him, Justin, we were like, oh, he seems like a 1950s, like,
I remember you
saying
the
words Beaver guy.
Sock hop after you met him.
Like, he's heading off to the sock hop. He seems so innocent.
Well, remember they had to put a clothespin on his hat because they couldn't find a hat that really fit.
Right. It was too his
small
head.
It's kind of a regular size head, so they had to, like, pin his hat
instead,
together.
Man, he has just been – he's got a little something to him. So that was something I liked a lot. Something I did not like to start the year, Dominic Canzone, period. Defensive struggles in game one, an effort struggle. Scott not happy about it. He's 0-4 to start the year. If you were ever looking for yet another example of why spring training stats mean nothing when you start the year, and let's also be clear, you know, how you start for the first four games doesn't mean a lot either. But after a torrid spring, Dominic Canzone is 0-4. After a spring so bad that the Braves decided, hey, we better bring in some help here, Jared Kelnick is 5 for his first 7 with 2 driven in and an OPS of 1600.
Silly.
So just remember, spring means nothing.
Yep.
Something in between? I'll give you Luis Urias. I know he's 0-4. That's the bad news. The defense is already a roller coaster. We might have to bring back the Brad Miller roller coaster sound every time he throws the ball. But he's gotten on base a couple times. He did hit a ball really hard the other day. Just happened to be right at a well-placed second baseman. There's been a little up and down. I'm not as negative about him and his start as some of the other things we've seen.
Well, Ty France saved his bacon and saved a win.
Yeah.
I mean, that was just, that was not that hard to play, and it was a terrible, it was not a Perry Hill mechanics either, just fundamentally. Like, the way he throws and delivers over there, we know you can watch JP, you can watch the other guys, follow the Perry Hill rules and fundamentals, and that was not it. But Ty saved the day and saved that win for him, which they desperately needed.
Yeah, remember the old Brad Miller roller coaster, man? That was
That was a wild ride.
Oh God! Oh. Let's go!
Luis is throwing the ball. You gotta be careful. Okay. I really like Mitch Haniger. What a fantastic start for Mitch. I am not wild about what's going on with Mitch Garver's back, however.
Yeah. Well, it's a Mitch Witch.
You're getting two sides of that sucker.
Yes, you are.
Yeah. And maybe they can't be good at the same time.
Right.
That's the problem with the double Mitch Witch.
Yeah,
you can't eat both sides at once.
That's the danger.
Yeah. But in between.
Could you not stack them on top of each other if you really wanted to?
I don't think that would work.
All right.
No, that'd be too much.
Okay. As the double Mitch Witch ambassador, Falk has ruled against that.
I almost said something even worse than what G said this weekend when I was going to say something about the sandwiches that you could make them better with, but I'm not going to say the words out loud.
No. Okay.
Because as soon as I started, what if you, and I was like, nope, can't say that. Nope.
Okay. I'm just saying they'd be too thick. You wouldn't be able to.
Yes.
Yeah. Wouldn't work.
Let's go that.
Yeah. All right. In between, Ty France. some good, some bad. As you said, Brock, the defense has been great. Saved the game Friday night. Yesterday, he snared that line drive right at him, 100 and something miles an hour.
Yep.
He's come up with a few hits, and he's gone the other way a couple of times, but we haven't really seen like what we're hoping to see from Ty France yet.
That's right. I just want to see a rocket in the gap. Just put something, come on. You know, from him and a bunch of these guys, let's go. You know, a number of times it's like, okay, come on, put one in the gap. I'm not asking you for home runs. Put it in the gap. Come on, hit that ball hard, put it in the gap. And there just were not many of those over the course of the first 4 days.
Not a lot of opportunities for that, no. All right, something I really liked a lot, and I think it's something probably gets lost a little bit over the weekend. I just loved what Luke Raley did on the base paths. I mean, he gets on base with a little, excuse me, single, broken bat job, bloop over the third baseman's head, makes it around to third, and then ends up scoring on a play that, quite frankly, I didn't think there was any chance he'd be able to.
Outfield halfway. Here's a pitch. Swung on. Ground ball right to the second baseman. Throw to the plate. And in there safely is Luke Raley. We got a tie ball game at 3-3.
Yeah, we've heard about that there's some sneaky speed there. Yep. You saw it. That was great.
Yeah, him and Cal Raleigh both got a little sneaky speed. For a catcher, Cal's got plus speed. I mean, he can, for a catcher, he can, big jumper can step on the accelerator. Yeah, and Raleigh, we knew about this and we heard about this when he came over from Tampa, that this is an aspect of his game. The power hasn't been there. It certainly was not there all of spring training, but at least, you know, kind of like Cabbie would do. Like, man, if you're going to get on the base pass and, you know, if you don't hit for a lot of average or a lot of power, you've got to at least be a difference maker as a runner. That just gets discredited. It's take it for granted. We don't talk about that a lot, going from first to third or getting that extra base.
And he did
tremendous reaction.
He broke immediately, slid to the right part of the bag, got impressed.
Again, Luke Raley, I know he's new here to the organization. I love the way he plays the game. You know, he walks up there left on left, tough matchup. This guy has not had much success against left-handed pitching in his career, hasn't had much opportunity. He's going to find a way. He's going to get on top of the plate. I'm going to find a way. Either get hit by a pitch, get on base anyway, and, you know, good things happen when you take that approach, which is a very team approach. So he's going to help us in a lot of different ways.
So I really like that. I don't know that I loved his at-bats other than that. He's not really been crushing the ball, but I'm going to give him a big something I liked there. In between, Polanco. The at-bats, some of them have been okay. He's hit the ball hard a couple of times. He only has one hit. It's a bloop single. But he missed a home run by about an inch and a half. So I guess I'll be, you know, gracious here. Just a little in between. Defense, like, range maybe not quite what you're hoping for at second base. Like, it's a lot of hope there. So far, a little in between on the results.
Yeah, and that's a position that you'd really like to see. You know, he had a line drive, the bases loaded, I believe, so Thursday or Friday. I mean, he just hit a rocket, and as you said, nearly a home run as well. So that's a position that we have seen some difficult times out of. So you would love to see some of those collection of hits come and, again, just change some of these narratives that, unfortunately, and it's 4 of 162. So not jump into any conclusions, not even write a sentence of what the whole story of this season will be. But we'd just like to see those numbers at that position escalate.
Another thing I really like this weekend, and I feel like it's gone under the radar, is the sweatshirts that the managers are wearing. Those are great. Do you see those? They're not wearing the, like, kind of old school big hoodies. They're like zip ups. They're cool. They look great. Scott was wearing one. Ikora was wearing one. I like those. You remember a few years ago, they, like, managers had, like, a revolt over the fact that they didn't want to wear, like, jerseys every time? Remember Terry Francona refused to wear his jersey because of his, like, circulation issues? You remember that?
No, not
Oh, my
really.
God. He, like, was so mad. I go, like, well, you have to wear a uniform. He's like, no, I won't wear one. It's like he claims a circulation issue.
Sure.
Now they don't have to wear uniforms. Yeah, they have to wear the pants, but not the shirt. So I like the sweatshirts. I thought those looked pretty good.
So Fanatics got that one right.
Well, I'm not saying that.
Yeah.
I also really liked what we saw from Munoz. Wow.
Yeah.
That's a wow factor.
Yep. Over triple digits pretty comfortably and just said, eat it. And you're going to eat it. You're going to eat it. You're going to eat it. You're going to eat it.
Please stop saying that.
Okay. Fine. Well, you started with the Mitch Witch and it's been in my head for 15 minutes.
You can't say eat it that many times in a row.
All right.
It just didn't work. Fine. Sorry, man.
Shove it. And you shoved
there
it.
There we go.
And you shoved it. And you shoved it. And you're going to deal with it. And you're not going to touch it. And I love that. Don't, you know, it's funny. when I watch games with former catchers, Salk, and those guys that read every swing, or even my father-in-law is watching a baseball game, and, you know, as an old pitcher and a college pitcher, and especially those catchers, they just read every little tendency, every little swing. They feel all of that in the batter's box. And Cal, so good calling that game. Don't get cute. If you can't touch this, you're going to continue to see it. And yeah, Mooney was awesome.
He was really, really great. I'll give you an in-between, and then I want to finish on one that I didn't like so much because I think you and I should discuss. I'm going to put Rojas in between. Guy's kind of found a way to come up with a few hits.
He's leading the team.
I know. Defense still going to worry you. There's not a tremendous amount of power for a third baseman. But I thought he's had a kind of a nice little start for a position that's going to be
a bit of a watch.
Good on him. I'm going to make that in between. By the way, I'm being told they're not sweatshirts, they're jackets.
Are you talking about the Nike zip-up ones that say Seattle on the side of the pocket?
Yeah.
Yeah, I got one of those. They're amazing.
They're sweet.
And they're really warm.
Those look good.
I like them a lot.
I thought they were sweatshirts. Apparently, they're jackets. All right. Let's finish with this one, Brock.
Style in pictures, not your strengths.
Huh?
Style and pictures, not your strengths.
That's enough out of you.
I mean, you're a tremendous writer. You're a brilliant guy.
Photography, that's a no. Wait till you see me draw. Wow.
Penmanship.
I couldn't be a worse artist. Like, if there was an award for the worst artist on earth, it would go to me. I'm so good at being bad at art, it's not even funny. It's embarrassing.
Your handwriting is atrocious.
Atrocious. And I can't draw, and I can't paint. I can't sculpt.
I went to Catholic school. They don't give A's for effort. I got an F in art in, like, second grade.
Oh, yeah.
They were like, this is horrible.
Grading kids' artwork?
Yeah.
So I don't think that helped my creativity. That's but I'm funny. With you.
Brock, the last one would just be the patience. And, you know, you and I kind of disagreed with it. I know they were sort of running away a little bit from controlling the zone and the patience on offense and brought in some more contact and trying to get away from the strikeout and the sort of the three true outcome thing. And, you know, obviously it didn't play out the way it was supposed to this weekend. You know, you struck out 45 times in four games.
Yes.
That's not what they're looking for. That's not the design. Again, you know me, I'm not that worried about the strikeouts. I'm worried about six walks over the course of a weekend.
Correct.
Like, you got to find a way to be a little bit more patient, especially all four starters have had pretty good stuff, and they just haven't been able to work those counts well enough. And I guess that's the thing I've been a little nervous about with this philosophy is like, okay, but where's the count working? Where's the, you can only major in so many things. Mm-hmm. And if you're trying to be a little bit more of a contact team and a little bit more aggressive, I worry that the other side of that is, hey, when that's not going well, it can have absolutely the same.
Did you walk away feeling that like this team was too aggressive over these four games, or did you walk away going, man, they did not have an answer for spin? Because
Too aggressive trying to hit spin.
Okay.
I mean, you got to lay off those pitches. That's what spin is to me. Like, you got to lay off. When that ball's coming in, you got to find ways to not swing at it. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, they didn't do that.
Or to fight it off and get to fastballs. I mean, 11, 12% of fastballs, untenable. That's it at any level. Like, you're just not going to survive. Not when the league average is 2 to 3 times that. You've got to get to fastballs to do the damage.
Right? All right. We'll talk more with Shannon Dreyer coming up at 8:40, just under an hour from now. Right now, though, Brock, let's do some football. Let's do some Blue 88.
This is Brock and Salk's Blue 88. We take you to the field as Brock Huard breaks down three football questions as only he can.
Now here's your hosts, Brock Huard and Mike Salk.
All right, as we sit here, Brock, April 1st, what is the next phase of the offseason now for the Seahawks? What do they do now?
Yeah, it is it's a lot of visits, right? It's starting to bring these guys in on these visits. And as John Schneider was talking to the guys the other day, sure, some of it every once in a while can be driven to, hey, here's a little red herring. Here's these guys they're bringing in. But it's also, boy, we got to get to know these prospects and see where they fit into our plans. You know, and we know this from past years. It's not just maybe for this season, for years to come. And maybe they're undrafted guys, Salk, they get cut in some other places. So it is, you're very particular about those. And then you're also bringing in some of these third wave vets that you're looking at to fill these needs. So it is still a busy time in these 3 weeks. And, oh, by the way, you also get your scouts in-house now. So all your scouts continue, you know, to have been spread around the country. They're at the combine. They're doing all their work. And now, man, now these man hours start to just pile up. And here was John Schneider talking about that with Wyman and Bob last week.
excited to, you know, have the scouts back in here with our new coaching staff and to be able to get together as a group now that they've been able to get settled and been able to get caught up on some of the draft prospects as well.
Yeah, so, you know, just think about all these different moving parts. You know, when we've had Jerry on over the years, DePoto, I'm always struck at, like, wow, that umbrella is really big.
Mm-hmm.
You know, from the international to the minor league to the major league to all the different branches of the coaching. And, well, it's not too different in the NFL. There is a lot of personnel in place. And then now when you finally get them all in the building, and oh, by the way, this might be the first time that Mike McDonald looks and, you know, and sits around a table with these scouts. Hey, my name's Mike. What's your name? Oh, you're the regional scout. Where? Okay. Right. And you just start to get to know. And we know how important that time is, that FaceTime is, that personal time in the building together. So they're going to crank it up, Saul, because 3 weeks from this Thursday is that NFL draft. Now, with the calendar turning to April, these things happen and come at you pretty darn fast.
That is true. Let's go to question number two. Well, Michael Penix had a heck of a 40 time, Brock, somewhere in the, depending on the stopwatch, 4.5 to almost 4.6 range, but let's call it in the 4.5 range. One guy got him up to 4.46, which would be pretty incredible.
Yep.
Is that going to help? Are we done now with the medical concerns for Michael Penix? Now,
let me hear from my boy, your boy, our boy, Bert Breer, who was talking about that and what he's hearing from those scouts coming out of a very successful pro day for Michael Penix.
There are a couple things here. You know, number one, the medical is really important. And I think we all know that. Different teams are going to have different medical grades. On him. One I talked to said the medical grade isn't great, but you can work with it, right? That's why the 40 time really helped him, because since he's had the injuries, he seemed a little bit more reluctant to run. But I think part of that's that he's evolving as a passer and becoming more comfortable as a passer. So he doesn't need to run as much. And running the 4.5, I think some scouts had him at 4.53, 4.54, 4.56. He's right in that range. That's really good, right? So I think that was a big win for him yesterday. He showed off his arm strength too.
This is such a longer discussion than a minute here in Blue 88. So maybe, I don't know, tomorrow, Field Yates is going to come on the show. Field was at Pro Day. He was at the Mariners-Red Sox game. He tweeted his love for this city and the sports fans and everything. So maybe tomorrow or at some point later in the show, we can have a chunky conversation. Because our boy Palumbus, and I thought it was a meaningful tweet, said, man, my grade for Penix is now off the charts. The fact that he has had that in his back pocket and didn't have to use it mm-hmm. because he wanted to maximize his arm and his brain to protect himself. I mean, that is what the NFL is, man. That is what professional football is about. We want to talk about processing. Oh, and a quarterback processor. And what does that look like? And how do I define it? That's it. You jump 37 and you run 4.48 to 4.52. And we hardly ever see that on a field because you know you need to be available and you know you've got a rocket for an arm and you're going to take advantage of that. And oh, by the way, it's kind of like a pitcher, right? I got all this stuff. I got all these tools in my tool bag. But when I need 100, mm-hmm. I'll shove 100 at you. That's what that told me the other day. It didn't clear his medical history. Those medical histories and those ACLs, those are real. The shoulders are real. But it does show you, man, just from a mental prowess to play the game from the neck up with having that kind of still incredible athleticism. Yeah, that to me, like Palumbus, ratchets him up, I think, a little bit more in this draft in 3 weeks.
All right, question number three. I know you had your first UFL experience this weekend, Brock. How was it?
It was pretty cool, man. It was pretty cool. The play is way better. By far, and I have been a spring league star. Think yes. about it, Saul. From the AAF that shut down that yeah. I didn't get paid for,
no,
to the XFL bad. That shut down with COVID, to the USFL that we played in a one-hub city, and now to the UFL, the merger of the XFL and the USFL. You took 16 teams. It was a bit diluted, and now it's 8 teams. And there's a lot of NFL dudes. A lot of them that have played years in the NFL that for one reason or another, injuries or otherwise, are out. There are guys hoping to get back in, and there will be from this crop of 8 teams. But I'm also reminded as I was hearing stories over the weekend of, man, what happened to this guy? Why did he flame out? Why didn't? Because there's medicals, as you just heard from Bert Breer, and then there can be other off-the-field issues that don't necessarily come to light until, well, you're removed from the league and you're like, what? He did what? He had what? And you start to figure out, like, yeah, man, there's character issues or there's decisions or there's, you know, other substance abuse issues that keep guys out of this league. And I don't know, just kind of reminded when I look at these rosters of how fine the line is. Certainly a receiver and DB, Salk. There are so many guys that run 4-4. So many guys have tremendous hands. So many great football players out there. But what is the difference? It's discipline. It's character. It's professionalism. Right, it's so many of these aspects that aren't measured by how high you know, jump or how fast you run. And yeah, once you're around this level of these guys, kind of the 4A, right, or AAA in minor league baseball, gosh, there can be one little thing away, but that margin is not very much, and professionalism really does matter.
All right, that is today's Blue 88. You know, usually we talk about things ahead of time. Right. I mean, usually we have a pretty good sense. We work on stuff together.
I'm sorry. Yeah.
I was a little surprised that you just booked Field Yates. I mean, knowing he's a Belmont Hill guy, my rival high school.
I texted that. If you had an issue, you should have responded last night.
Well, what? It was already kind of a done deal.
It's kind of like being at the wedding. It was like, if anybody has any reason, these two should not be married.
Right.
It's like,
that's
too late.
I'm not going to raise my hand.
Did you play Field Yates in a sporting event at some point?
No, he's younger than me, I think.
Okay.
I mean, he's a great artist. He's got great penmanship. You know, he's great photography.
Yin and yang here.
The only potential upshot here is that he should finally be the first person to come on this show and actually back up the tease that I attended after every football game. He should be the first person to be able to talk about those tees. So, yeah.
So he went to the same school as our beloved wide receiver for the
Jake
Seahawks?
Bobo. Yeah, they're both Belmont Hill guys.
Oh, he was talking up Jake Bobo big time.
Right, of course. I'm sure he was with the cabal.
If you
there.
Had an issue, just you can even offline text me.
No,
which
it's fine. I don't want to come between, you know, a good interview and stuff.
Sure.
But I thought maybe it was something you could have cleared with him. I am an elitist. Right, you just could have cleared it ahead of time. Like, hey, is it cool?
Is Belmont more elitist than
Belmont
UVM?
Hill?
Yeah.
Yes.
It's
first
more
of all,
elite?
It's an all-boys school.
Oh, geez.
Right? I mean, it's a terrible place. I don't think I'm very good at reading a room filled with terrible people. So, all right. Coming up next, there was some good, there was some bad, there was some in-between this weekend. We went through it. But there is one thing that happened this weekend that should have the longest tail of anything else that we saw. That's next on Brock and Salk.